Welcome to Life and Sirens, Behind and On the Scene, a podcast by First Responders. We're your hosts, Sophie,
Jamie,
and Aubrey.
The content provided in this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered medical advice. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policies or positions of any medical institutions, emergency medical services, or healthcare organizations. Patient privacy is a top priority, and all discussions involving real-world emergency situations are de-identified and altered to ensure confidentiality. Always consult with a qualified healthcare professional or your local EMS protocols before making any decisions regarding patient care or medical practices. Listener discretion is advised, as some topics may include discussions of real-world emergency situations.
Welcome to another episode of Life and Sirens. This is a special episode. It's going to coincide with a presentation we're doing with the McSwain Trauma Education Project, and that is Fragile and Fatal, the Hidden Dangers of Geriatric Low-Impact Trauma. I know that sounds very boring, but it's actually super important, and I don't feel like we go over this at all in school, just how important and how different geriatric trauma and management is, because there is a lot of little things that can make things go big bad very fast. So, just some key points here. So, for adults age 65 and older, trauma is a major cause of death, making up about 25% of serious injury cases. Falls are a big part of this. So, with about 1 in 3 older adults getting hurt badly enough to need medical care or limit their activity. So, each year this leads to about 9 million fall-related injuries. That is insane. In 2021, falls caused over 38,000 deaths in this age group. Mm. Isn't that terrifying?
That is. Yeah.
So it is actually the top cause of injury-related death in older adults. It's just ground-level falls.
Which makes sense, because have you ever taken a patient in that you think is like totally fine and chilling, and then you go back and you look at your outcomes and it says expired?
Well, that's something we're going to talk about too, is that a lot of these patients have the delayed onset of actual symptom presentation. So we're going to go through physiology and pathophys of aging. We're going to go through mechanism regarding low-impact trauma and high-risk injuries, assessment challenges, and some of the atypical presentations. And then we'll wrap things up with just our pre-hospital management strategies and a scenario. So yeah, let's dive in. I think James is going to kick us off with a pathophys.
So we're going to start with the physiology and patho of aging. And you know, when we talk about peds, everybody is like, kids are not just little adults, right? When we talk about geriatrics, we always learn about them as just crunchy adults.
Yes.
But that is not necessarily the case.
Nope.
So we're going to break down the physiological changes and explore how they affect trauma assessment, management, and recovery. So recognizing these differences is key to identifying your serious injuries early and delivering effective care this vulnerable population. So some of the things is that there's going to be a change in bone density, your skin integrity, and organ function. So as far as bone density go, we all know that there's like osteoporosis and osteoarthritis and things like that. As people age, their bodies are going to undergo changes. It's going to make them more vulnerable to injuries, and they'll be slower to recover. Your bones are going to become weaker, more brittle due to your osteoporosis. It's going to make fractures more likely, even from minor falls. So we're very used to these impacts that are like from bed to floor, or couch to floor, or standing to floor, whatever it happens to be. It's carpeted, and we're like, oh, they're probably fine. But osteoporosis requires very little force to be able to cause a fracture. You're also going to have a decline in muscle mass, which leads to weakness and balance issues that's increased the risk of falling in the first place. So not only does it make it easier to fall, but then you have less cushion when you do fall.
And let's be real, those little pads they put at the bedside at nursing homes, that is not going to cut it.
That is not cut it.
That's basically like falling on a carpeted floor, which is enough.
Which is enough. And most of the time, they're moved because they're consistently in the way.
Yes.
So those are going to be your muscle mass and your bone density changes. Your heart and your blood vessels also are going to change. They don't respond as quickly to trauma. So in older adults, they're not going to show the usual signs of shock until it's far too late. The brain is also going to shrink slightly with age, which makes it easier for slow, unnoticed bleeding to occur after head injury. And we'll kind of go through why that happens. Your skin becomes thinner, heals more slowly, so even minor bumps or cuts can turn into bigger problems. And we've all witnessed, like, a skin tear.
And it's, like, the butterfly skin. And yeah. It's, like, sometimes insane, the, like, tiny yes. skinny level that they can get.
Yes,
like,
it's really, really shallow, yeah. but, I mean, it's a huge break in that system, which is going to open them for infection and a lot of other problems. All of these changes mean that what might be a minor injury in a younger person that we're traditionally not going to be really concerned about can quickly become serious or even life-threatening in an older adult. So we talked about, we've just kind of gone over, these are just the overview of the changes we're going to see. But really important in geriatric populations is going to be the brain and the changes that you see there. And so as people age, you're going to see a change in their nervous system. It's going to slow down and it becomes more vulnerable to injury. And the way that this kind of coincides to head injuries is your brain naturally shrinks over time. So you're going to have extra space inside your skull, which sounds like not a big deal, except for it means that in an older adult, if they hit their head, their brain has more room to move. So we all learned about like the coup contra coup and car accidents and things like that. Well, if your brain has more space to smack the inside of your skull, then it's going to have an increased like kinetic energy as it's moving towards a hard object. So if an older adult hits their head, their brain has more room to move, increasing the risk of small tears in blood vessels. This can lead to slow, delayed bleeding, like a subdural, and it may not show signs or symptoms for hours, even days. You also could mistake these signs and symptoms for something else. So a very minor like altered mental status or confusion in a dementia patient that has recently had a fall, your suspicion needs to be high for those because it could not be a part of their chronic conditions. And then additionally, many older adults experience some degree of cognitive decline, ranging from mild memory issues to more severe conditions like dementia, which can make it harder for them to recognize or communicate symptoms after injury. And a lot of these patients, there's going to be a neurological breakdown. So whether that is a sensory breakdown or a perception breakdown, they won't necessarily perceive pain the way that a younger population would, and it's going to be harder for them to discuss it. So we've got our brain, we've got our neurosystem, now organs. So as people get older, their organs don't work as effectively as they used to, which affects how the body responds to injury and stress. So their heart and blood vessels are stiffer, which makes it harder to maintain blood pressure and deliver oxygen quickly when needed. It means that after an injury, an older adult might not show signs of shock right away, but their body is still struggling to compensate. And we see this in a lot of different conditions, and our patients are medicated for a lot of these problems already, which can also cause an issue. And so as far as your lungs go, so moving on to a new system, they're going to lose elasticity, which makes it harder to clear mucus and recover from injuries like rib fractures, which increase the risks of pneumonia. And if anyone has ever picked up like a cute little granny, you know that they breathe super shallow. Yeah. At baseline already, they just seem like in a very content phase. But if they have a rib fracture and breathing now becomes painful, their risk of pneumonia is going to be significantly higher than if someone that's 20 breaks their ribs.
I was actually listening to a podcast recently, and one of the docs said if you can sit up, you can cough, and you can roll over, then your risk of mortality is significantly lower. So that being said, some of these injuries can make it hard to cough. Mm-hmm. So let's medicate them. Just side note.
It can also make it really hard to sit up.
Yep.
That's a...
Especially on their own.
Yeah, and you don't think about it, but that's a lot of accessory muscle usage to sit.
And roll.
And a lot of older people lose... We talked about muscle breakdown. They lose a lot of core strength.
100%.
And that is sitting up.
Yep.
You're also going to see some changes in your other organs. So your kidneys are going to slow down. They're not going to filter waste and medication as well, which can lead to dangerous drug buildup or prolonged effects of medications like painkillers. So you want to be cautious of these effects, but don't let it keep you from medicating your patient. Just be aware that they may have a buildup or they may need lower dosing for it to be as effective. Their liver is also going to work slower. So especially in the liver, drugs that need first pass through the liver to become functional, you need to think that through. It might not mean that they need a higher dose. It might mean that it's just going to have a longer onset. Blood clotting is going to take longer, especially in people on thinners, which is going to increase your risk of internal bleeding. It's going to increase your risk of internal bleeding, not eternal.
I mean, it could be eternal.
Oh, it could be.
My bad.
Gotta watch out.
Yikes.
And finally, last but not least, the digestive system is going to slow down. So older patients are more prone to constipation and dehydration, which can complicate recovery after an injury or hospitalization. It's also typically kind of the last thing that we really pay attention to. But if you think about older patients that are involved in a traumatic event, if they are constipated or they are dehydrated or anything is going on with their digestive system, it can, one, like constipation, you have a higher pressure system in your digestive system, so that can be a concern for rupture. But then dehydration, they're already starting fluid down, which can cause you some problems. So
urinary retention, if you have a full bladder and you have a high impact, mm-hmm. cause rupture. That's kind of the kidney side of things, but it's something to think about.
For sure. And a lot of old people, they don't drink a lot of water because they don't want to get up and go pee.
Oh man, you know how many times people have said, I have not taken my Lasix because it makes me pee too much. I'm like, I know, but you need it.
It's the point. That's the intended effect. Right, so we're going to keep talking about skin and bones because when we talk about trauma, that is a lot of what we see. So as people get older, their skin and bones go through natural changes to make them more fragile. So your skin is going to lose collagen and elasticity, which we all notice. I'm 32 and my hands are starting to look a little...
I know. I got these wrinkles on my forehead. It's freaking me out.
I'm like, collagen, be gone. They're starting to look a little granny.
Me too.
Guys, I got to work on it.
Moisturize.
It makes their skin thinner, drier, more prone to wrinkles, see, bruising, and slow healing. So if you have a grandpa or like a dad that repeatedly whacks their hands on stuff and are just constantly bruised from hands up, it's just because they have a lower collagen level and elasticity, and so it's just easier for them to bruise. Their oil production also decreases, which causes dry and itchy skin.
And that is what leads to...
Jerry Snow.
Yes. So it's not their fault, guys.
Yeah, the skin flakes, man. It's a part of the biological process. At the same time, their bones lose density and strength, increasing the risk of fractures, especially in weight-bearing areas like hips and spine. And so we see that a lot with patients. They'll have a ground-level fall, clearly have a hip fracture. It's because they lose density. And this happens because the body absorbs less calcium and vitamin D, which are essential for your bone health. Your joints also wear down over time, which can cause stiffness and conditions like osteoarthritis. It also, as you move less and your joints are less functional, your ligaments and your tendons start to break down as well. So those attachment points aren't as strong. And all of these changes, you can slow them if you stay active with weight-bearing exercises, eat a nutrient-rich diet, and use proper skincare and sun protection. And it can help keep your skin and bones healthier for longer. Not all of those things are practical. Some patients are kind of already in this population, and weight-bearing exercises is not a thing that they're not going to be doing squats in the nursing home.
I would say this age group that we're seeing in the geriatric frame is they were not worried about sun protection in the very least. So
no,
it's a little too late for that one.
Right. Have you ever seen, especially where we are, have you ever seen those like farm corn-fed grannies?
The leather.
Yes, that are like 98 years
old.
Honestly,
their skin is tough.
It is so tough. They're 98 and they're still in the field like picking beans.
Yeah. And that, like, but that's what those very elderly patients say. Like, I mean, we have some in our zone that are over 100 and they'll be like, no, you just never stop moving and you'll never have any issues.
I will say, what's your secret? And they're like, never stop moving. Don't sit down your whole life.
Yeah, stay busy.
Okay.
Not like that one lady on the news that was like, I drink Dr. Pepper. Does anybody remember that?
Yes. Yes, I remember my hero.
Yeah.
So as people get older and they go through these changes, you also have to be aware of comorbidities. So there's other factors like osteoporosis. Oftentimes they take anticoagulants. There's cardiovascular disease and they're going to have neurological deficits. So osteoporosis we've covered. It's going to be more bone fragility. And so we need to be concerned because it's going to break easier. Anticoagulants, these patients are going to bleed more. And so you'll see that on a lower level, like we've talked about with skin tears, where they're going to have like excessive bleeding with a smaller injury, but also on larger areas. So if you do have somebody with a ground level fall that you're not necessarily concerned about, they're mentating well, they had no loss of consciousness, but it's questionable whether or not they hit their head and you don't see any outward injury, but they are on thinners, that patient is already a huge... I mean, they're like a trauma alert.
That
they already have a huge risk.
Is the highest liability scenario. That is the highest liability scenario.
Absolutely. Because all of these slow bleeds, one, they already have questionable vasculature. And we're on thinners, which means if they do have a bleed, it's going to be fast and difficult to control. So other than anticoagulants, you also have cardiovascular disease. And so that means that our heart is going to have a hard time compensating. whether or not that means that they're on a blocker just because they have hypertension and that's what they use as their rate and blood pressure controller. So you're not going to see that they're tacky. Whether or not that's that they have baseline have hypertension. So their hypotension takes a long time to show up. There's going to be a lot of different ways that cardiovascular disease can influence your choice on whether or not you think this person's symptomatic. And then lastly is neurological deficits. If you have somebody that already has a baseline neurodeficit, it's going to be really hard to identify if it's different, especially if you don't have really invested caretakers.
Yeah.
And so in these populations, you have to do a pretty thorough assessment to really figure out what you think is gonna be what they need. So with all of these changes, I think we've established that these patients are kind of scary when you get to them and there is something going on. But we want to talk about it specifically in terms of low impact trauma and high risk injuries.
Absolutely.
And so we're going to kind of move into what that looks like.
So for me, I am more afraid of a geriatric trauma than I am any PED. I think you guys, I think you need to be too. And we're going to talk about why.
I was going to say, tell me why.
Yeah,
because I'm scared of babies.
I am not, because, man, they are just, they're bouncy.
They are bouncy.
Geriatrics are not.
They are not bouncy.
No.
So recognizing the high risk and low mechanism injuries is pretty essential for early intervention. Because like we've talked about already, some of these injuries, though they be low impact, they are going to have some pretty catastrophic outcomes that may be very delayed. Not always, but it can happen. And we can talk about this in terms of frailty. So obviously we have patients who are like 50 and are way more frail than patients who are like literally like 85 years old. It just depends on, you know, a bunch of factors. We're going to talk about that in a second. But there's a way to score this. And I think that's one of our big factors when we determine if this is truly a trauma, like a leveled trauma patient or not. Mm-hmm. So ground level falls are the most common cause of trauma in this population. And we totally under triage that because it just seems so minor. So that makes up 80% of geriatric trauma admissions are ground level falls, which really, that's astronomical in my opinion. So even a low speed car accident can lead to severe injuries because these older patients are more frail, they're more fragile.
We just had one that was a low speed impact into a sign and she had three rib fractures.
Yeah, they'll have like sternal fractures and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is wild.
Yeah, and we had that. Mm-hmm. She was running around scene and she had a sternal fracture.
Yeah, see, they're sneaky.
They are.
You don't know. You're like, you were literally running around.
Yeah.
What is going on here? But those are some of the most dangerous injuries from those low impacts because it is so misleading. These injuries might include like subdurals, where these minor head traumas cause brain bleeding that can be life-threatening, hip fractures, which have high risk of complications and death, and then rib fractures. Rib fractures are serious business because these patients will have trouble coughing and moving around and doing their normal activities of daily living, which can cause, you know, breathing problems, pneumonia, respiratory failure, all the big bad things. So even if they seem really small, it can quickly become very serious for elderly patients. And really quickly, I'm going to pull up this frailty scale. It breaks it up into several sections, and it's called, the 15 variable trauma-specific frailty index. So comorbidities, cancer history, yes or no, coronary heart disease, MI, CABG, PCI, medications, or none, and then dementia, severe, moderate, mild, or none. Daily activities, does this person require help with grooming, help with managing money, help with doing housework, help with toileting, and help walking, and that one breaks it into wheelchair, walker, cane, or none. And then health attitude, feel less useful, feel sad, feel effort to do everything, feel lonely, and then falls. It's like all of these factors are going to lead to a higher frailty score. That is so hard for me to say. Apologize. Function, sexual activity, nutrition. So we address nutrition based on albumin levels. So it's an albumin level here. And then you decide the score. So obviously higher the score, the more likely morbidity for those patients. So we don't really use that pre-hospitally. It is something they use in trauma, especially at large trauma centers, but it is just something to consider when making your decision of whether or not you're going to transport to a trauma facility.
I like that a lot because it includes things that I would not initially have thought of.
Yeah. Yeah.
As like a score that matters for like physical injury, but it clearly does because all of these things are daily activities that if you can't do,
yeah,
there's probably a reason you can't do them.
100%. I really liked it too. And I think maybe it is something we could eventually, there's some like abbreviated score systems. Like there's the Frail scale. That's like five questions.
That's
like
also it's really cute.
Yes, it is cute. And it could be incorporated into our charting systems.
Yeah.
We have specific, you know, assessments and protocols for pediatric patients. That really needs to be something we start doing for geriatric patients, in my
Absolutely.
Opinion.
In the last couple of years, and specifically more in the last year, I think I've started to really realize that we do not treat the geriatric population as separate as we should.
No, it is very bizarre to me, but that's why we're here today. So let's talk about low mechanism, and is there even such thing? Not really in this population. I think, obviously, if a 19-year-old has a ground-level fall, why are you even calling us? But
it does happen.
It does happen, but
owie.
It does make a huge difference. So low mechanism, I know we use this term a lot, but really it doesn't even matter in geriatric populations.
Very true.
So low mechanism trauma can be sneaky and sinister in these older adults because injuries often don't seem serious at first, but they can quickly become life-threatening due to frailty, weaker bones, and slower healing. Even a simple or fall or minor bump can cause hidden fractures, internal bleeding, and the biggest, scariest part is the delayed complications. So we leave a lot of these patients home, we help them up, and we leave. And we maybe move their 32 rugs out of the hallway that caused them to fall, but we haven't prevented the process of their injuries from worsening.
Just a quick side note, if anybody here is over the age of 70 years old, I need to know, what is the obsession with the rugs?
Yeah, why are there so many rugs? They have like a rug on their carpet in front of their recliner.
Yes.
It is wild.
It and is. It is like, it is a generational divide.
It doesn't help you. I think they think that it's maybe going to help them get some traction on like their feet on the carpet. And so their feet on like the hardwood, but like the carpet is going to slide.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wild.
Normalize
wild.
Gluing those things down. If
yeah.
That is
something.
The case.
Get those little non-slip mats.
For sure.
Double rugged up
I've
on
seen
a Friday night.
Some big ol' injuries from those.
Yep.
So, for example, like we've talked about subdural hematomas. We talk about that a lot because that's one of the more common head injuries in these adults because they're slow and they're sneaky and they're sinister and you don't know about them until pretty much it's just too late.
Yeah.
So it's something to think about. Even small head injuries, especially if these patients are anticoagulated, they probably need some imaging done of their head. Hip fractures. A lot of these patients won't be in, like, a ton of pain like you would expect for a hip fracture. They'll still be experiencing pain, but it will probably be mild at first, which is very misleading. But hip fractures are a huge deal. And not only do a lot of them need surgical intervention, they can also lead to long-term immobility. You get a lot of infections because of this, and then some of these complications can be fatal. So for me, when I'm transporting patients who have injuries like this, I'm probably going to try and take them to a facility that has multidiscipline care and then has a good opportunity for like appropriate follow-up care. Mm-hmm. That does make a difference. And I'm not saying this necessarily has to be a level one trauma center, but just make sure they have the appropriate, they have surgical, they have like multidisciplines. They're not just a general hospital, maybe. So something to
like
think about.
We've all seen these patients way more than we think we have.
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, the person that you pick up where they've fallen, they've been picked up, standing was uncomfortable, they've sat for a while, and now they can't, they're no longer weight bearing.
Yeah.
Like that's the same.
Yeah, not
that's
just
that
hip
patient
fractures,
population.
But sometimes they'll have like some like sneaky pelvic fractures that like really are sneaky.
Oh yeah, like, and we kind of categorize them as all as hip fractures, but a lot of it's the femoral neck.
Yeah, yeah,
is what they'll end up breaking,
especially if they have replacements already. And then like we talked about, also rib fractures, even from minor trauma, these can happen. They just don't have a lot of padding anymore, you know, they're a lot of times skin and bones. So very easy to break those ribs. A really common missed injury in low impact trauma in geriatric patients is flail segments.
Which is crazy when it's you really first scary. Told us.
Yeah,
this?
Because like
what?
That seems like very obvious, right?
Right. In school they're like flail chest and we're like, yeah.
And you yeah.
we're never gonna
it'll
miss
smack
it.
You in the face. You don't even have to look for it.
Yeah.
Turns out you do.
Well, but makes sense if all of your skin and tissue is all moving downward. It is harder to identify yeah. what's supposed to be where.
Everything's kind of saggy.
Yeah. So. It's a rough life.
It is. So because pain perception can be reduced in older adults, they might not realize how badly these injuries are. And we might not either. So thorough assessment is obviously very important. I know that we downplay a lot of these. Mm-hmm. I think we all do. Let's just be honest. But what looks like minor could be life-threatening, so at least let's make sure we are doing a hands-on assessment head to toe. I know it might not always feel great to do that on a granny, but she needs it, and if she wants to keep being a granny, then you gotta do it.
Absolutely. I need to get better at more hands-on assessment with geriatric patients.
Yeah, it just feels like...
Because a lot of times, in adults, I just trust them
yeah.
to be like, hey, this hurts, mm-hmm. but I need to remember... that pain perception is different for them.
Absolutely.
And so kind of similar to kids where you always want to make sure that you are like eyeballing everything and putting hands on to make sure that like things are not actually injured because yeah. they have a hard time communicating with you. Same thing with geriatric patients. I need to be better about hands on.
Absolutely. And a lot of these patients may even be on like chronic pain medications. Mm-hmm. So that's another mask mm-hmm. to these injuries. So moving on to this delay in symptom and downtime issue. So not only does this age group fall a lot of them are stubborn and they want to, obviously, me too, retain their independence. They might not ask for help when they need it, or they may refuse something like a medical alarm or something that they really need. So
my grandmother.
Literally, yes. Her.
Yes. We got rid of it because she refused to wear it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One time, I think it was, might have been me and Aubrey. We went on a call because the medical alarm was assigned, like, registered to an apartment. It may not have been you, but it was pinging at the dump.
Yes.
Yes, yeah, and I it was just because that. They just threw it away.
Yep. She said, I hate this. No.
Yep. So, those are important, and it's something important you may want to educate family about if they don't have it yet. I even have been on calls where, like, the family is mad that the patient has pushed their medical alarm because they've been contacted. Okay, you need a new emergency contact.
Yeah.
Let's change that. Ooh. It's me. Okay. So, lying on the floor for extended time after a fall can cause serious health problems, especially for older adults. I mean, it doesn't take a lot of time to develop things like pressure sores. And especially if they're on the floor for a long enough time where they may have experienced incontinence or things like that, that can only worsen your pressure sores and skin breakdown. So that is a big issue, and then that can lead to infection. All of these are just like situations that can spiral out of control. Something I do want to mention briefly, and we'll go into detail in just a second, is rhabdomyolysis. We don't talk about this enough in school, I don't think. This is something I just kind of learned doing the job and, like, learning from the people around me. But rhabdomyolysis, if you don't know, it occurs when muscles are compressed for too long or overused. So in this situation, it's not going to be overuse. It's going to be compression, like, on the floor, whatever it is. They break down and they release harmful proteins that can cause kidney damage. And we know most of these patients, their kidneys are not functioning at max capacity. And a lot of them have chronic kidney disease, so that is a really big issue. So if you have a patient who has been down a long time, probably would be in everyone's best interest to transport. And then hypothermia, I think that we don't really think about this a lot, but they already have a hard time managing their temperature. We can go to any geriatric facility or an elderly person's home. It's probably 800 degrees. But when they're stuck on like cold floors, or sometimes it happens when they're in the shower and things like that, so they're going to end up getting hypothermic because they are not able to regulate their temperature as well as a younger person would. And then if they're down for a long time, they might be without access to water, so we're going to have dehydration and electrolyte imbalances. And they also may not have access to their medications, depending on how long or how important the medications they're on. That could cause a lot of other physiological issues. So finally, delayed medical care means that they're likely to have more serious injuries that are more visible to us because they're experiencing the pain by then. But it also means that they could have a lot of internal things going on, such as, you know, imbalances in electrolytes and things like rhabdomyolysis that we cannot see. So it's still important that we transport these patients if they're agreeable to it. And then really quickly, just making sure we're getting them to the right location. Some of these patients might need closer transport, just depending on how stable or unstable they are. So let's dive into rhabdo. So rhabdo is a serious condition that can happen when someone falls and they're stuck on the floor. When muscles are compressed for an extended period, they start to break down and release contents, such as myoglobin, into the bloodstream. So this can lead to kidney damage or potentially kidney failure. Some of these patients may even need acute dialysis. It might not be long-term, but that's how serious rhabdo can be. Some of the symptoms are muscle pain, weakness, swelling, and dark urine, which they're probably going to have all of these if they've been on the floor for any amount of time. Mm-hmm. That's significant. So as far as treatment goes, it needs to be treated quickly. So again, transport is probably indicated. Rhabdo can cause serious complications unless we treat it promptly. So IV fluids, I know that sometimes we worry about giving Granny too much fluid, but like, she's been on the floor for a long time. She needs fluid, I promise. Don't be afraid.
For sure. Even, and like, odds are she's going to be dialyzed.
Yeah.
If the injury is to that degree. So absolutely. Like, give fluid.
Yes.
The solution to pollution is dilution. Dun,
da, da, da. Chad.
Chad.
Like I said, severe cases may need dialysis. It could lead to permanent kidney damage, and ultimately this could end in death. So it's really critical to get these patients up if they've fallen. Like I said, if we have a patient that we're seeing from an EMS perspective that's having these repeated falls, it may be important to educate the patient and the family on something to mitigate this, whether it is, you know, in-home care, long-term care, or even something as simple as medical alarm.
Yeah.
Because these falls will kill them.
Also, something that I think that we forget in rhabdo is, it's not only because it's a muscle breakdown, all of your intracellular ions are now extracellular ions. And so you want to pay attention to like your potassium and your sodium, and especially the geriatric population, they're already
potassium through the roof. Yes. Let me tell you, in rhabdo.
They're already so hyperactively or so hyperreactive to ion changes and electrolyte changes that when their potassium, when they get hyperkalemic secondary to muscle breakdown, I mean, it can throw them into an arrhythmia super quickly.
Yeah, and a lot of these patients may have been on like Lasix or something like that. Mm-hmm. And if they haven't had that because they've been on the floor for a couple days, that only increases your risk. So
for sure,
definitely important to think about.
So now that we've told you guys how, or more likely why, to be so scared of these patients and to...
They're spooky. I'm scared of grannies, not only by their unnatural strength, but the injuries they can have.
Correct. They do have granny strength.
But just when all of a sudden they get confused, they got the strongest granny paws you've ever experienced.
What's your specialty?
They just get you.
And nobody... What's my specialty?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Whenever a granny has the granny grabs or the dementia grabs, you just put two rolls of Coban in their hands, and that way they have something in their hands. They won't grab your 12 lead wires off. So
I can't tell you how many grannies have come in by Aubrey with
double Coban'd up.
And it is honestly the greatest hack because they're happier, we're happier.
We're getting our assessment done.
We're getting our assessment
yes,
done.
Yes, everybody is in a good place.
So now that we have told you guys to be scared of these patients and to assess these patients and everything to watch out for these patients, now let's get into how to go about these atypical presentations. So older adults often present with subtle or atypical symptoms, making assessment challenging. We've kind of talked a lot about that already. They may not show typical signs of pain, shock, or injury, and conditions like confusion or weakness could be the only indicators of serious trauma. Like, it's especially hard when they already have a neurological deficit, like Jame already talked about. And that's what getting a good history is very important with these patients. But we're going to get into that in a minute. Medications and pre-existing conditions can mask or mimic symptoms, and vitals may appear normal even when the patient is unstable. James kind of talked about the pharmacological barriers that go into that.
We also, it's something to mention, we talked about shock index a couple episodes ago.
Yeah.
Honestly, just throw it out the window. If they don't have an elevated shock index, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't
if they
anything.
Do, holy crap.
Oh, it's bad already.
You were already scared, now you're petrified.
You're petrified. Something else that's worth talking about is communication barriers. How many times have you had to scream in a geriatric person's ear because they repeatedly tell you they cannot hear you?
Honestly, I get so embarrassed.
I know, I do too.
Yell. I'm like, especially hey, like, I have to.
I have no other option.
I start to feel bad after a while
when they're like, I'm sorry, I can't hear nothing you're saying.
No old people can hear me because... Yeah. My tone.
Your so voice soft. Is in a register. That's hard for them to hear. Yeah. I am also, I'm in a very neutral register. It's like a background noise tone.
Just low.
Yeah. And
I'm just
a lot
elevator
of times,
music.
Yeah, I'm just elevator music in the background. And a lot of times they'll be like, Dairy, what was that you said to me? Like,
I'll just look at fire.
I don't like my granny voice.
No, why are you so good at it?
I know, it's pretty terrifying. I mean, she even did the good granny walk, remember that?
I know.
That thing went viral.
She's just ready to be a granny, I guess.
Oh, I'm just preparing myself for my future.
Yeah, she's the oldest one in the group.
What?
Dang. All of that to say is you always need to maintain a high level of suspicion when performing an assessment on these people, because what you get at face value is not always the case. In fact, if your takeaway from this should be, it is never the case.
True.
So, falls in older patients are often caused by a mix of medical condition and other physical factors. Common causes include sudden drops in blood pressure. We've all seen that, orthostatic hypotension at work.
Oh, yeah.
Dizziness, irregular heart rhythms, side effects from medications like dizziness or confusion. Neurological conditions such as Parkinson's disease or previous strokes can affect balance and coordination, while infections like UTIs or pneumonia can cause weakness or confusion, always increasing the risk of falls. So it's always super important to ask any patient, but especially patients in the geriatric population, what caused the fall? Because we have been on many a fall that have been anything but a ground level fall.
Yeah. Can go either way.
Could go either
way. You'll never know by the dispatch notes.
You will never know. It is always a mystery.
We're even considering doing an episode.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh, what were we going to call it?
Falls or anything but.
Yeah.
Anything but a fall.
We're still working on the title.
Let us know if you have any suggestions.
Because these causes are often subtle, thorough assessment is crucial. Identifying the underlying medical issue is essential not only for treating the injury, but also for preventing future falls. A careful assessment can catch conditions that might otherwise go unnoticed, helping to reduce complications, improve recovery, and keep patients safer in the long run.
Yep. Trauma naked. I know it doesn't feel like a trauma, but it is.
But it is. Let me tell you.
What if it wasn't a fall at all, Aubrey?
What if it wasn't a fall at all? We're going to talk about some injuries that are very prevalent in the geriatric population, but have nothing to do with a fall. So we're going to categorize this as non-accidental neglect-related injuries in older adults. These are from a consistent lack of proper care and attention. These injuries can include severe pressure ulcers from not being repositioned regularly, malnutrition and dehydration due to inadequate food or fluid intake, and poor hygiene such as unwashed skin, soiled clothing, and untreated infections. Neglect can also lead to frequent falls and fractures when safety measures aren't in place or when mobility assistance is lacking. Don't get caught lacking.
Yeah, if you ignore granny, she'll do it herself.
She will do it herself.
This might not end well.
Fall down.
Yep.
Medication mismanagement, like missed doses or incorrect prescriptions, can cause serious health complications.
One thing I've seen, are we talking about the same thing, is like over-medicating intentionally to keep them. Yeah, sometimes people will just sedate their grannies.
And sometimes grannies are getting to a place where they cannot really like reasonably take care of their own medications.
Yeah.
But they'll take the same meds in the morning that they took in the afternoon, that they take at night, and they won't remember if they took them or not.
Right.
And so you'll end up with a wildly hypotensive mama.
Yes.
So but it's because she took her blood pressure medication four times today.
She needs to be in a facility. Yes. Sometimes that's the best option.
Absolutely. These types of injuries often develop over time and may even be overlooked without proper assessment, but they're a serious indicator of neglect that require immediate attention to protect the patient's health and dignity. I think that what we can take away from this thus far is that geriatric and pediatric should be lumped into the same category, right? You're always on
high alert
with pediatric calls. You should be doing the same for geriatric.
Yeah. Very vulnerable population.
Yes.
For sure. And a lot of these injuries that you'll see from neglect, like pressure ulcers, poor hygiene, malnutrition, things like that, sometimes caregivers will write them off as a fall.
Mm-hmm.
And so like if they're found on the floor and you're like, what is this injury? They'll be like, oh, it's from falling.
Yeah.
But it will clearly be a pressure sore that is like tunneling.
Or like bruises here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, that is weird in an old person.
Yes. So you have to have high suspicion that the injuries that they're saying are from said trauma is actually not from the traumatic event. So you want to make sure that you're watching out for that as well.
Yeah. There's a slideshow that goes with this, and we'll post some of these to our social media. If you're watching this on YouTube, we'll add them to the screen. But I specifically put this photo in here for Aubrey.
I love it.
You know how you ever get called to a nursing facility for like, I don't know,
attacking us with a plastic fork?
One time we went for a man who was attacking staff, threatening to attack staff with a wooden spoon. Mm-hmm. They took it away from him, still called us.
We went for a lady who was threatened to throw a can at a patient.
It was empty.
At a facility.
It was an empty Coke can.
Yep.
Scary. And sometimes they'll send PD with
us. Yeah.
I know. I'm like, oh my God.
The picture is, by the way, a granny holding a frying pan with her fist in the air. She's serious. Don't come at her.
Do not come at her. So let's talk about memory and behavioral complexity in the geriatric community. Assessing and treating geriatric trauma patients with memory issues, agitation, or hallucinations can be challenging.
Granny strength is a thing.
It's a real thing.
It's wild, and their nails are usually very long, and they will hurt you.
They really try to dig in.
They do.
They do. Mm-hmm. They know their strength, and they will use it against you.
They will.
They will.
These patients may struggle to accurately describe what happened, where they are hurting, or how they feel, which can lead to missed or delayed diagnosis. Agitation or fear may cause them to resist care, refuse treatment, or become combative, making it harder to perform a thorough assessment or provide necessary interventions. Pain can also be difficult to evaluate, as some patients might not express it clearly or may act out through aggression instead of verbalizing discomfort. How many times have we been on that granny that just keeps yelling but not saying anything?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She's saying a lot without saying anything at all.
I would caution, just as a side note, chemical restraint in these patients, because it can worsen delirium or cognition. Have you ever heard of a patient having like a sedation related procedure or surgery and they go under anesthesia and now they have dementia?
And families are like, they haven't been right since.
Yep.
Yeah, yes. You really have to weigh like physical versus chemical restraint.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Additionally, trauma and unfamiliar environments can trigger or worsen delirium, further complicating your care. So just remember, we're a lot of the times taking these people from a place that they're familiar, their home, their facility that they've been at for a while, and we are taking them in essentially the back of a U-Haul, and we are hauling them off to an unknown place. And a lot of the times they don't even know what's going on. They don't even remember being injured. So that can take a lot of patience.
And a lot of times with these patients, we'll find that they repeatedly discover they are injured while we're with them.
Like, oh, my arm. But I'm like,
yes.
Yeah.
And it's like startling.
Two pieces right now.
Yeah.
It's startling for them every time. And Aubrey is far more patient than I am on our truck. And she does a really great job with these patients. And she does not argue with dementia grannies or papaws. She just like gets on their level and they become friends. Yeah. And if they're mad at the staff, then Aubrey is mad at the staff with them.
Yeah.
And they become best
okay.
friends. If they hate the police, Aubrey's like, yeah, let's get away from these guys. Like, it works out so well because they have a, like, ally.
Yeah.
And they will always come with her so willingly.
To improve assessment and treatment, it's important to use calm, simple communication, involve family members or caregivers when possible, and create a quiet, low-stress environment to help ease confusion and ensure better outcomes. I also need that for myself as well.
So. Yeah. Aubrey knows. Jamie and I have earplugs that we bring on calls with us.
Because overstimulation.
Highly recommend Loop earplugs. This is not sponsored.
But if you frequently get agitated because of loud sounds, they're fantastic.
Yep. 10 out of 10.
Let's talk about some management strategies. When managing geriatric trauma in the pre-hospital setting, a careful and tailored approach is essential. Wow, that is sounding a lot like pediatric as well.
It is.
That is crazy.
So is this. Older adults are more vulnerable to complications, and even minor injuries can quickly become life-threatening.
And just because I know that I've like really hit home with this about these being traumas, transport decisions, I'm going to pull the trigger more quickly to take this patient to a trauma center. I'm not saying every single fall needs a level one trauma center, but I would recommend it be a facility that has, you know, the surgical intervention, the multidisciplinary, just so that patient can get everything they need. That is our job, to get patients to definitive care.
For sure.
And
like some of our like local hospitals that we'll go to are not necessarily a trauma center, but they have orthopedics.
Yep.
They have surgical interventions. They've got, like, you know, they have some of the things that we would need. So that might be fine. But some of them may need something more than that.
100%. If it's complicated in any way by some kind of medical condition, by downtime, by more than one body system,
for sure.
Honestly, trauma center is the way to go. So when managing geriatric trauma patients, it's crucial to focus on early identification, immediate care, and the ongoing monitoring. And that's another reason you may want to choose a higher level facility, a trauma center, just because they're going to have that follow up and continuation and continuity of care, because they are able to see all these specialties in the same place and they have really good relationships with like rehab facilities and things like that. So obviously first we need to do a thorough assessment, keeping in mind that older adults often present atypically or delayed. We've discussed this. It's important to screen for those cognitive issues, confusion or agitation, and gather that information from family or caregivers. I know some of these caregivers may not be able to provide us with the most accurate information, but at least to know that this patient is normally altered or is normally normal, like that, at least the yes or no there is important.
For sure.
So during stabilization, gentle handling is really key here. We can worsen injuries very easily. We can turn a closed fracture into an open fracture. They're very frail and fragile, like we said.
Yeah, we talked about our skin barriers being less than intact.
Absolutely. And an open fracture is very dangerous in this population. It's dangerous in any population, but especially our patients with low immune systems and things like that. We need to focus, obviously, on the basics, airway breathing circulation, but just be cautious with how we're intervening. We don't want to make anything worse. We need to make sure that we factor in comorbidities and things like that. And then we talked about this just a second ago with Aubrey, reducing environmental stress. Speak calmly. If there's too many people in your truck and you have an agitated geriatric patient, make sure that we maybe remove some of the responders. Some people might be upset about that, but it is important and it is for the best. So once we're stabilized, monitoring for delayed complications, just make sure we're reassessing, especially for those providers who might have the longer transports, because you may start to see those signs of like head trauma, head bleeds, things like that.
Sure. So when you're assessing the geriatric trauma patients, it is crucial to conduct a thorough primary and secondary assessment, recognizing that symptoms may be atypical or delayed. And we keep saying that they're atypical or delayed because I really want to like hammer that home.
This is a weird patient population.
Yeah. And so you want to maintain a high index of suspicion, understanding that even low impact injuries like ground level falls can cause significant harm. And so even if Granny is like, darling, I'm fine, honey, I'm fine, just keep your eyeballs on that Granny. Yeah. She might be fibbing.
She's probably
an AFib.
Is. That is true.
So early screening for cognitive impairment, agitation, signs of delirium is essential, as these factors can complicate assessment and communication that goes with pre-hospital and in-hospital care. You want to utilize standardized tools such as the GCS scale. We talked about the frailty scale, and use those to evaluate. These scales can assist in tracking mental changes. Additionally, gathering information from family, caregivers, bystanders. You want to understand their baseline, any changes. So another tool for assessing delirium, which is pretty cool, is CAM, Confusion Assessment Method. I had never heard of this, Soph told us about it. And it helps identify delirium quickly and accurately, focusing on four key areas. Can you walk us through it, Soph?
Sure. So CAM, it's usually used in hospital, maybe used in trauma as well, but we need to identify if this patient is altered or if it is like situational induced delirium, which is entirely possible, and that's very easy for these geriatric populations to move into. So it's like James said, we're in four different categories here. So acute onset and fluctuating course. So this just means, was there a sudden change in mental status, or has it been fluctuating throughout the day? That fluctuation is more a symbol of delirium. They might have moments where they are very lucid, and then like as the day goes on or things like that, things could get worse, or based on intervention or like downtime, if they it's been one of those days in the hospital where they haven't really done anything, that delirium could worsen. So inattention, like I said, is the patient easily distracted or struggling to stay focused? So delirium can worsen if these patients are left alone. But also, like, if you're like, hey, Martha, I know that you're talking about World War II here, but I just asked you, were you having any pain? So if they, like, are not normally demented and they will just be having one conversation, I know a lot of us are ADHD and we'll do this anyway, like in the middle of their conversation, switch to another conversation. That is a good clue of it. Or just like slow to respond would also fit in this category. Disorganized thinking. So are your patients illogical? Are they tangential? That is a word.
Tangential.
Mm-hmm. It's part of this thing. And they go on a tangent about World War II. Okay, that could be a sign. Or, you know, the elderly altered man that you pick up and he's just like pseudo having a flashback, but he's like telling you all about it.
Mm-hmm. Telling you about Nam. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. That could be a sign of delirium. And then level of consciousness. Are they becoming lethargic or difficult to arouse? You just need to decide, is this because of a physiological, like neurological issue, or is it because they are becoming delirious, which is very common in hospital. We might not see it as much, but something that can cause delirium, which I recently learned from listening to another podcast, the doc was talking about C-spine precautions when we put patients in C-collars, especially the geriatric patient. They already can't hear, so we're covering their ears even more usually. They already can't see, and then because of the way we usually, like, most people aren't just, like, sitting straight up when they're in a C-collar. They're usually reclined. Their visual field is limited. So because of those two things and just inability to move around because of the C-collar, that can quickly cause delirium. So we need to, yes, these patients probably need a C-collar. Put them in a C-collar. But we need to make sure that this is getting cleared very quickly.
I thought that was super interesting, that even a short phase of being in that position, and by short, I mean relative, like an hour, 2 hours, could cause delirium.
Yeah. So wrapping things up, CAM, for a positive CAM result, the patient must show acute onset of these symptoms. So inattention plus disorganized thinking or altered mental status. It's just they need to show acute onset and then one or two of these things when their baseline was significantly higher than this. And when you're calling in a report, I think most facilities will probably ask for a GCS, but I think it is important, even if they are like a GCS-13 and that is their baseline. Like we talked about before, the frail scale, the frailty assessment, when they do have GCSs lower than 15, that is one of the things that could make their recovery or potential decline look a little scarier. So just, you can just tell them the GCS, even if that's their normal, that's okay. We under triage these patients. So if it's a 13, it's 13. That's all right.
So now we're going to get into stabilization and immediate care of these patients. When managing geriatric trauma patients, it's crucial to focus on gentle handling and to prevent worsening fragile injuries during immobilization and transport. Early pain management is essential, using medications that minimize confusion and side effects like low-dose opioids or non-opioid alternatives. Always, as always, prioritize ABCs, airway breathing and circulation, while being cautious with fluid resuscitation to avoid overwhelming an already compromised cardiovascular system. And we've kind of already talked about the exceptions to that. Reducing environmental stress is equally important. Providing calm, simple explanations and minimizing overstimulation can help ease agitation and confusion. Additionally, providers should activate trauma protocols early, treating all elderly trauma patients as high risk due to their decreased physiological reserves and higher likelihood of complications. So I've just kind of talked about that, how we are chronically under triaging these patients. Given that geriatric patients are more susceptible to severe outcomes, even from low impact trauma, the threshold for transporting them to a trauma center should be very low. Older adults often experience delayed or atypical symptoms, and injuries that seem minor can quickly become life-threatening. Early access to specialized trauma care ensures comprehensive evaluation and faster intervention, ultimately reducing the risk of complications and improving outcomes.
So, really quickly, I know you've heard us talk about this before, and that is, if there's any question, the answer is no. So if there's any question whether you think you should be going to the local hospital, the answer is no. If it crosses your mind that I should probably go to a trauma center, I might want to go to a trauma center, the answer is yes, you need to go to the trauma center. And the answer is no, I don't need to go to the local hospital. So that is my guideline in life. If there's any question, the answer is no.
Absolutely. And even for those services that are a bit more rural, like I understand that you do have more resources to balance. Like if you only have two ambulances in your county, you have to be thoughtful with like what right. risk does that put your population in? And is there aircraft? Are there aircrafts and things like that? But don't just write that patient off as not injured because of those risk factors or because of those factors that you have to deal with in your within your system. So make sure that you're
life.
Yes, make sure that you're thinking about those things. And that is a rule that I did not have, yeah. but I do now, because Soph was like, I think I asked you one time, I was like, should I go to this hospital with this? And you were like, no, you asked me some no.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay.
That is that. I feel like that for any intervention. And I think that you mentioned this, that one of our instructors at our local college, Alex, he said, like, if you even considered doing the intervention, you need to explain why you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the same thing. Like, if you consider going to a trauma center, are you ready to explain why you didn't?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Probably not.
That's a good point.
Probably not. Probably not.
All right. Finally, we're going to wrap things up with a scenario.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite part of the show.
This is also a great picture.
All right. So, dispatched as medic unit, respond non-emergency for an 82-year-old female. Fall. If you have a CAD computer, this is what it says. Neighbor is the caller. Caller states she hasn't seen the patient in 2 days, but she had a key to let herself in. Found patient on floor. Patient seems delirious. Unknown if there was a fall. Unknown medical history. Unknown loss of consciousness. Hangs up with dispatcher because fire department's on scene. So, guys, like I said, the scenario is 82-year-old female found on the floor by neighbor after not being seen for 2 days. She has a history of hypertension. We find all this out on scene. She has a history of hypertension, AFib, she's on warfarin, she has osteoporosis and type 2 diabetes. This is a suspected fall from standing after maybe she was experiencing dizziness, because that's what's happening the week before. She told her neighbor all about it.
So what What does our environment look like? What does our scene look like?
So the scene appears cluttered with loose rugs and small furniture that could have contributed to the fall. A tipped over walker nearby suggested maybe a loss of balance. There's no immediate hazards present, but overall the home appears to lack fall prevention measures. The patient lives alone.
Are there any like meds or drugs or cigarettes or alcohol or anything laying about?
That is something to consider. Just because a patient's geriatric does not mean there is the absence of drug or alcohol abuse. Keep that in mind. You find there are several medication bottles that are visible on the nearby counter, including warfarin and diabetes medication, which includes insulin. It's unclear if the doses have been missed, but the disorganized appearance suggests that she maybe hasn't taken them recently.
Okay.
How did we find the patient?
So the patient is found lying on her left side, close to her recliner. Her position suggests she may have been unable to move after falling, likely due to pain, maybe weakness, or an injury.
Granny broke a hip.
Yeah, thinking so.
Okay, and we kind of already talked about, like, it's very cluttered.
Yeah.
Like, does it appear, like, struggly, like she tried to get up, maybe?
Yeah, I think there's some overturned furniture. Her walker shifted in a way that appears she maybe tried to get up, but was unsuccessful. Like I said, nearby furniture is disturbed. There's a pillow on the floor, possibly indicating attempts to get comfortable while she was waiting for help.
All right, what are we missing? Temperature?
So the home feels cold, and the patient's skin is cold and pale. This is concerning, maybe for some hypothermia. She is on a wood floor. She hasn't been moving. The thermostat reads low.
Which is odd for Mama.
Yeah.
It is odd.
Okay.
You said that there was it looked like she had tried to get up and she could kind of reach within what she was around. Did she have any access to food or water?
There are no signs of recent food or water intake within her immediate reach. The kitchen appears untouched, and there's no water bottle nearby. Her lips are dry and cracked, and her skin turquoise is poor.
Hydrate or dehydrate?
I know, this is like the worst case scenario.
All
right, last but not least, this is all Arlie's favorite. Is there incontinence present?
Unfortunately, the patient's clothing is soiled, and the area underneath her is damp, suggesting incontinence, not only visually, but the smell. During the prolonged time on the floor, this could indicate additional risks, such as skin breakdown and infection.
So, my theory. So, we have mechanical fall, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Mechanical fall, loss of balance. And now we're cold, so hypothermia. Maybe, use hydrate or dehydrate. You got real concerned about the no water intake, so dehydration.
No meds.
She's had no meds.
It sounds like she's been on the floor for quite a while. Mm-hmm. So skin breakdown, rhabdo, so AKI, and then also...
she hasn't had her insulin.
No insulin, yeah. So what's her sugar?
Yeah, so how are we going to assess this patient? Let's go ahead and get started with that. What assessment do you want to do?
We want to know if she'll be able to verbalize any pain that she's having now. We do want to do a full physical assessment, if at all possible, before moving.
Well, the patient states everything is hurting.
Yeah. Well, then we definitely want to do a physical assessment.
Yeah.
And kind of see if figure it out, narrow it down.
We stabilize or medicate any pain. I'm concerned for maybe hip fracture. We want to make sure we're good there.
Yeah, there's no obvious deformity that you can tell while she's lying on her left side, but she does cry out in pain when you try to move her.
So we're gonna get a line. We'll give pain meds.
Do you want vitals?
Oh yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
So
that
her
sounds great. Let's do that first.
All right. So her blood pressure is 162 over 90.
Okay.
Her heart rate is 102. Her respiratory rate is 16. Her O2 sat is 90% with a poor pleth. She is freezing.
Chilly cold.
Her temperature is 96, so not as cold as we thought, but you only have a tympanic thermometer.
Oh, so trash.
And her blood glucose reads high.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, boy.
She is an AFib on the monitor.
Okay. All right, so we probably baseline have a history of AFib, but still, we're going to get a line. We will do pain management. What are you thinking? Like low opiates initially, like 50 Fent?
Yeah.
Cool. And then fluid. We've been on the floor for a long time. Our sugar's high. We're probably dehydrated. And we're in AFib.
Yes.
We're going to start with a fluid bolus.
I think so. She has dry mucous membranes, poor skin turgor, and is altered.
Wonderful. By that, I mean bad.
How are we going to move her to the ambulance?
Ooh, I vote a scoop.
I love a good scoop stretcher, let me tell you.
Yeah, I think that once we've been able to medicate pain to the degree that we could probably roll her, assess that left hip, I would love to use a scoop stretcher to try to get her up off the ground.
Perfect. So we have decided to move her with a scoop stretcher. We have provided fluid resuscitation, pain management. Is there any other considerations as far as immobilization goes?
Probably C-collar.
I think C-collar. What about a spine board?
No, thank you.
I agree.
I would be concerned for the amount of time she's on it. It can really worsen. Like, it's hard. And part of our problem is that we have muscle breakdown from being on the hard floor.
Yes.
So I don't want to add to that by being on a hard board.
I'm very concerned about that. We do not like spine boards in this room.
No.
Scoop stretchers for the win, for
sure.
Oh,
yeah.
We also probably, she's a little bit cold, so why don't we will give her some blankets. Yeah, we'll turn the heat up.
Toast you warm.
Yeah. So, if it's possible, maybe contact family. If there's a way, or if there's easy way, because the neighbor didn't know anything. So, maybe get some information from them. What about our transport decision?
What are our options?
Yeah. So, let me tell ya, same as usual on every podcast episode. You have a critical access hospital that is 10 minutes away. You have a general hospital with an ICU that is 30 minutes away. And you have a trauma center that is 1 hour away.
I think I'm going to go with the level one trauma center. We have too many comorbidities. We have too many other factors that are going on that I would feel comfortable to go to the general hospital. And plus, she is in a very stable state that I would feel comfortable traveling the hour to get her to the definitive care.
Yeah. She has a lot of systems involved right now.
Yes.
So I think that we need that comprehensive care.
Sure.
Whether there is significant trauma, I think that we think trauma center and we're like, we can only take trauma there. Mm-hmm. I think that it's important to remember, no matter what time of the day it is, these trauma centers have to have these multi disciplines available. So this patient is going to get what they need when they get there.
For sure. Can I be so honest with you?
You would go to the general hospital? No,
not now. But prior to us having this conversation and really breaking down like the importance of geriatric care and just kind of reminding me all the risk factors, I probably would have gone.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, me too.
To our general hospital, because I would be like, oh yeah, they got ICU, like they can take care of it. But she has so many systems involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's so terrible, I think, for patients too, when they have to get transferred and they're already so sick. And like, our job, part of the six pillars on the Star of Life, thank you. One of them is definitive care. Yeah. That is our job. We need to try to get patients to definitive care to reduce mortality. It will reduce discomfort. Mm-hmm. And the quicker you can get to surgery if needed, it can reduce significantly the complications.
For sure.
It's a hazardous situation to transport to the wrong facility.
Absolutely. I will do much better after having done this.
Yeah, I agree.
So just some key points to wrap things up. Low impact trauma can be fatal. Even minor injuries can lead to severe complications. Delayed symptoms are common. Always maintain a high index of suspicion for hidden injuries. Just like we say, peds aren't just little adults. Geriatrics are not just older adults. They have a vastly more complicated situation that we have to manage. Also, early intervention is critical. So, again, making sure we're going to the correct definitive facility. Let's be gentle, and pain control does matter. Pain control matters. Let me repeat this. Pain control matters. If a patient's already altered, but they're in pain, that is not a good reason to withhold pain management. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I don't care what level you're practicing at. You need to hear that.
Do not be the 1900s doctor that thought that babies couldn't feel pain.
That is so crazy. Did you know NICU babies? They're not sedated. They're just tubed.
I know.
It's still a thing. Freaks me out.
Wild.
Crazy. Comprehensive assessment is essential. Like Jamie said, we need to make sure that we are getting hands-on with these patients. Yes, they're adults and they can typically tell us what's hurting, but what if they can't? So With that being said, this population should make you nervous.
And now it does.
Now it does. Don't be terrified. Just be highly cautious.
All right. High suspicion. This has been Life and Sirens, produced by three nerds trying to bring you content that you might actually care about.